This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's July 17th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Howdy.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, I'm gonna segue this with another item here, but the wind, sometimes also known as Florida Hills. Yeah. Yep, the wind can be a real factor. It's a real factor when you're riding
your bike.
You're
going to rant about wind? You can't control wind. What are you going to do about it?
We're going to talk about that. The things you can do with the wind. But anyway, we'll get there. Wind is wind.
One of the things you have to do about wind is just accept it. You really can't do anything about it. I spent a good long time cursing it on Longboat Key, but it just laughed at me. It just kept blowing.
Oh, yeah. That's it. But the wind also, just so you know, the wind also had a critical move and an influence on the Tour de France stage 10. So this is why I'm bringing up the wind. Like I said, we're gonna move our way around on this. So anyway, the wind. And how about stage 10? If you didn't see stage 10, whoa, pretty cool. There was a roundabout in stage 10, and the peloton basically split around the roundabout, and when they went around, there was one way that was a little longer than the other way, apparently, and then the wind came in, and there was automatically a split in the peloton. Unfortunately, some very key members of the peloton were stuck in the second group, and the second group got as close as like 11 seconds. And then they got destroyed by the wind some more. So it was a tough day. That's why I brought up the wind as a rant of the week. Because, you know, none of us really like wind. It's just
not a good
thing.
Who has seen the wind? Neither I nor you.
Oh, no.
But when the leaves hang trembling, the wind is passing through. Who has seen the wind? Neither you nor I. But when the trees bow down their heads, the wind is passing by. By Christina Rossetti.
Oh, very, very nice. So what do you do about the wind? Let's talk about the wind real quickly. We're just going to go very quickly through this. Get low. Ride in a tucked position. Do that. Very good. Wear tight clothing. Don't have anything that's flopping around.
Okay? Curse.
Right. Gear down. Use a lower gear than normal. It might cost you some speed, but it'll help you keep your stamina longer. Draft. Yeah, if you're riding in a group, get on somebody's wheel, especially somebody who is a little wider than you are or a little taller than you are.
Yes,
or
both.
That's very, very helpful. Or both. If you're really lucky, then you'll find somebody who's both. And if they're even a little larger than you are, they seem to deal with the wind better than the little people do. But anyway, and then ride with the wind whenever you can.
I've had big people say to me, I use the wind for training. And I'm like, oh, shut up.
Yeah, well, you know what? I used to race against some guys that came up from Florida. They spent all winter down in Florida, and they were riding in the flattest areas you could. And I tell you what, I had all I could do to stay with them on the hills because the wind. It's the wind. It's how you train. That's really what it is. So anyway, rant of the week. On a positive side, okay, I can't say enough. I can't see enough. I can't watch it enough. I can't talk about it enough. It's the Tour de France. Yay, it's the Tour de France. So it's kind of a cool thing. So the Tour de France is all over television right now if you have the NBC Sports Network.
Sometimes it's even on regular NBC.
Sometimes, occasionally, yeah, but not as much as some people have been telling me. They were upset that it's not on there that much. But anyway, the Tour de France, yeah, we saw the wind stage. Then there was a rest day. Today they're at stage 11. I have stage 11 up on the screen. It's a pretty flat ride today. A couple little poppers, though, and one is really close to the end, and I have not seen the results yet, so please don't tell me if you know. So we'll, because they should be done by now. But this is also the one where they ride through the sunflower field, and you know that's that.
I like that.
So I got that up on my screen here. So anyway, they're going to head towards the Pyrenees, starting by a visit of the Tarn department, the teammates of the. Okay, so anyway, it's they are going to go by the sunflowers, which is really cool. So keep watching the Tour de France. It's really fun. It's really exciting. This year, especially exciting because it's like anything goes. You just don't know what you're going to see the next day. We had, and this one, I got to shout this out on a positive side. The sprint that was won 2 days ago was won by the World Cyclocross Champion. Yes, 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 yes. So anyway, Van Aert won the final sprint. It took him completely by surprise. It took him by surprise that he was able to do it. And you have to understand the two disciplines, cyclocross versus a Grand Tour rider, they're on two entirely different ends of the spectrum. And we'll talk about that one when we bring my guest in here maybe a little bit too, because it's kind of a fun thing. But anyway, the man was crying. He was just very emotional about it. He had no idea he was going to pull this off. He's 24 years old. He's won 3 world championships in cyclocross. This guy is unbelievable. Keep your eyes on him. He is definitely one to watch. So, anyway, maintenance minute. This is a quickie on checking your cables, ghost shifting, and what to do about it. Fran calls it ghost shifting. She goes, my bike is ghost shifting. And so that's a good thing.
You called it ghost shifting.
I thought you called it ghost shifting. Anyway, what it is when your bike just decides it's going to shift without you touching the lever. And what does this mean? Well, it means that there's something wrong.
It means your cable's going to break on your ride, and you're going to have to get rescued.
You just gave away my answer.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Happened to me.
That's okay. But now I have Fran trained to the point where she comes back for a ride and goes, my bike is ghost shifting. So that immediately gives me the indication that I need to take a look at those cables. Because the cables, the way they wrap around, especially the STI levers on road bikes, they tend to get really brittle after a while. And then they'll break one strand at a time. And one strand broken will give you a ghost shift. And that is an indication that you better get to that right away, because it's kind of a pain in the neck to take it apart.
All strands broken mean you will not shift.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Or you don't have strands because you have batteries, and then your battery goes dead, and then you don't shift either. But that's another story.
Yeah.
So anyway, ghost shifting, if it is happening on your bike, you need to do a very serious, close investigation of your cables. Okay, that's it. I have a special guest here today. Okay, we have Jed Kornbluh here from West Hartford, Connecticut. We have had him here before. And so you may recognize that name. We have a career list here. Co-owner and international sales manager of Somerville Sports. He was the national sales manager of Verge Sports. He was the project manager at Kermisi Sport. The sales manager at Holbrook Sales. Boy, how do you say that? Anyway, and most recently we had him on with his partner in podcast, Jeremy Brazil, who they do a cycling racing podcast called Marginal Groans. There it is. He's a lifelong cyclist whose family has been active in cycling since the 1970s. Kornbluh started racing from the age of 9, and much of his childhood involved cycling-focused tours and rallies throughout the Northeast, West Coast, and in Europe. And now he is the new executive director of Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program. Congratulations, Jed, and thank you for coming to the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Glad to be back in the studio with you.
Yeah. How was that for an introduction? Was that okay?
That was great.
Yeah.
I'm
So anyway, this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. It's quite a program, and it's, tell us about it. Go.
The Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program's mission is to put kids and families on bikes with a pathway to bicycle racing. So we have 3 seasons and 2 different divisions. We've got our school teams, which race mountain and cyclocross in the fall, mountain in the spring, cyclocross in the fall. And we have our youth program, which is a regionally based program, where we've got mountain, road, and cyclocross. So we span all but 2 months of the year with cycling programming just focused on kids. And we've got about 550 kids statewide on about 45 different teams, combining the school and regional programs, as well as our junior travel team, which are sort of our Eagle Scouts or our all-stars from our programs.
Beautiful. Now, this is a nationally recognized program.
We are. We are a USA Cycling Center of Excellence. We've won Club of the Year for 2017 and 2016, 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
We have been able to push forward some policy with USA Cycling, and USA Cycling is looking at us as sort of the next evolution in junior cycling. You know, USA Cycling is seeing their numbers severely decline across the board in road racing, and we're hoping to be the antidote to that with our platform.
Well, it's a great platform. I can tell you about just my experience with it as far as Cyclocross race promoter, and you know, being able to get, you know, three or four juniors to show up to a race many years ago, and that was it. And they were all over the age group span, so we just kind of threw them all together. It wasn't very fair, but it was what we had. And now we've got 60, 70, sometimes more riders show up for a cyclocross race, and they're all juniors. And we have, of course, broken down in the different age groups, and maybe you could talk a little bit about age groups and how that works, do you know?
Sure. So I arrived in Connecticut in 2016. My wife transferred or accepted a job at Pratt & Whitney, and I had been running a cycling program in central New Jersey called the Mid-Atlantic Junior Cycling Program, which was a very, very small version of CCAP. When I arrived in Connecticut and saw how big CCAP was, I was absolutely astonished. We didn't have anything like this. This is what I had hoped to build in 10 years in the Mid-Atlantic. Junior cycling had just sort of gone by the wayside. But now with our program, and there are other programs like Baltimore Youth Cycling, Boulder Junior Cycling throughout the country, we're starting to see sprouts of 9 to 14 racing and 15 to 18 racing. And like you said, in our cyclocross program, we have different age categories ranging from 9 to 14 and 15 to 18. So our kids can be competitive against their friends. We score separately for boys and girls. And those riders generally move into the 15 to 18 and then also do category racing as well. So we've got a great pathway to elite cycling.
That's great. That's great.
And what town were you in Central Jersey?
Oh, in Hopewell.
Hope. Did
yeah.
we talk about
Didn't
this?
We talk about that? Yeah, we talked about this when he and Jeremy were on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We went
not too far from, because I'm from Central Jersey.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So we did this already.
We have hills there, but you know, talking
to
where I grew up in Vineland, New Jersey, we have we have Florida hills down there. We have nothing
to
do. Yeah.
And where I was too in Hightstown, East Windsor, and then, you know, south of Princeton. Once you get north of Princeton, it starts getting hilly.
Yeah.
You get into Hunterdon County. I'm not sure if Hopewell's in Mercer or it's in
It's right on the northern edge of Mercer County.
Yeah.
So we consider I considered us Hunterdon County because we would only ride in Hunterdon County.
Right.
We never went south into Mercer County.
So Sourlands.
A deadly ride. The Sourlands, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, tons of Sourlands. And Wurtsville and West Amwell.
Some of the best riding.
Frenchtown and Stockton.
Right.
And sometimes you'll go to Lambertville and get a coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
At Rojo's.
Yes, at Rojo's. Oh, my God. Exactly. John Kramer took me to Rojo's.
Yeah.
That is the best spot.
The best spot.
There, and I like Burrow Bean in Hopewell as well.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I can't even.
Well, we'll have to go down there and do a ride.
He said Rojo's.
Yes, he did.
I can't.
Absolutely. I know. Fran is a Jersey girl,
by
the way, if you didn't know.
No, but I love
is
it. Let
a Jersey
me, let
girl.
Me tell you, my friend John, he took me to Rojo. He took me on a ride to Rojo's, my own personal ride, and we were going around. We were like in and around Lambertville and stuff like that. He lives in Ewing, and he knows all those roads back there. And he took me to Rojo's. And I got a cappuccino at Rojo's, and I was sitting drinking the cappuccino. First of all, they gave me the cappuccino, and there was a heart in it. So I'm sitting there with this cappuccino, and John and I are sitting chatting, and he's telling me a story, and I took a sip of the cappuccino, and the cappuccino was really, really good. And I said to John, he's like, blah, 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 my father, this and that. And I'm like, wait a minute, John, I'm having a moment. Sat there with my
cappuccino.
You're
having an emotional connection with your coffee.
So Rojo's, it's this place. I think it's an old factory building, and it's got cement floors. I'm not sure if we went there. It's got cement floors. It's got big barrels, and I think they might roast their coffee there.
They roast on site, yes.
Right. Yeah, so they have these big barrels, and it's a little industrial looking, a little rustic. Right. And they have these, you know, lovely wood tables. And
I think you brought me there. It's got big open beams on the inside, and it's right near a river or a stream.
It's right on the canal.
Yeah.
And there's a great pizza place next door. Mm-hmm. Lambertville is just such a cool little old mill town.
Well, yeah, I think you brought me there.
Yes, you mushed together Lambertville, New Hope.
Right.
Because New Hope's on the other side of the Delaware.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, just across the bridge. Yep.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've been there.
Whoa.
Well, there's some good riding in there in the spring, which we can talk about down the road.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Yeah, well, we, because Fran's sister still lives down there, we go down occasionally, and we'll ride with the Princeton Freewheelers.
Sure.
Which is a very large club in that area.
And I'm a member. So,
yes, you are. Yeah. So we get all their newsletters and all that fun stuff. By the way, if you are, you know, an avid cyclist and you occasionally visit an area, it's okay to join and support that club because, you know, they're doing good things for cycling and you'll always have people to ride with when you get there. It's a good thing.
I'm a member of a lot of clubs. I'm a member of, I mean, I mostly ride with TCC, but I'm a member of the Charles River Reelers and the Princeton Freewheelers and even the Narragansett Bay Wheelmen. And that may be it.
Yeah.
I think that's everything.
That's probably it.
Yeah. Sounds I was a Pequot for a while.
You're part of Sound Cyclists out of, no?
Oh,
that's a huge group. The Blumen Metric is their big
I've never done the Blumen Metric.
Yeah, never
Somebody
done it.
Somebody told
Have
me
you done
I
it?
Should.
No, I was sort of turned on to it this year a little bit late. It's definitely on my calendar for
next
year.
It's a very popular ride.
Huge ride.
It brings a ton of people out of New York City, so that's why it's so popular is because of the proximity of it.
Right.
Very close.
One of our... the chair of our advisory committee, Jill Colazar, is a big supporter of that club and a big volunteer with that club. So Jill urged me to do the ride, and I'm going to do the ride next year.
So you better do it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because you have the answer to a board of directors, don't you?
I do, yeah. So
how does that work?
So we've got a pretty active board. They're made up of... the way CCAP started, it was started by Aiden Charles, who owns... Charles Coaching and Nutrition Services, based out of Middletown. Their office is right across the hall from mine.
Mm-hmm.
And this operation grew. It started out as a juniors program, a racing program. And, of course, David Hoyle, who's our former executive director who passed away in April, was selected by Aiden to lead this program. And he eventually became the first executive director of the program. Aiden went to some folks that he knew and some clients of his and was able to build a board and was able to get some financial support together. And that's where we are today, roughly 5 years later.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. It's such a cool program, and it's so cool to get kids on bikes, especially in this day and age where trying to grab that kind of interest is very, very difficult. Because cycling, you know, there are some things about cycling versus other sports that are out there. Cycling takes a little more time. So the more time you can get a kid interested in riding a bicycle, maybe the less time they have in front of the screen, which this is.
Right.
So this is a little shout out to parents if they're looking for a way to get their kids away from screen time and do something really positive and special. Cycling is a great avenue.
And there are tons of studies out there about cycling being a great antidote to ADHD. The Specialized Foundation, which provides grants to cycling programs all over the country, mostly school-based, through one of our peers, NICA, has shown, and they've got studies, you can look these things up online, that this is a great cure for ADHD. Put bikes in schools, get kids on bikes, start bike programs, and you're going to see grades improve, attention increase, and just general positivity grow from these kids. And we see that with our program. You know, we have three seasons, essentially. Our mountain and our cyclocross seasons are the ones that are really growing right now. Road is steady. But a lot of folks are not as comfortable with their kids being on road bikes, and I can understand that. Thankfully, all of our programs have very well-trained coaches that are USA Cycling certified. They are all trained in first aid and CPR, and they're all very aware that the road is a dangerous place or can be a dangerous place. But some of our teams, like the Farmington Youth Cycling Program, Farmington Valley Youth Cycling Program, they mostly train on rail trails. The West Hartford E-Racers, they train in various parks throughout West Hartford. So there are definitely ways to get your kids involved in this program that don't mean putting them out on Route 6 and just saying go north or go west or go east, whatever.
Exactly.
Mountain and Cross, obviously, are great ways to get involved in the sport. Every kid's got a bike in the garage, and they can do it on either.
Yeah, yeah. The cross thing is just such a. I have said this many, many times. I'll say it again. I think cyclocross, if you're going to get someone involved in bicycle racing, if you have a kid or an adult or anyone who's interested in racing on the road, go cross first. Oh, yeah. Always go cross first. Because the beauty of cyclocross is that it's 40 minutes. It's not a long time commitment. And so you're going to be racing for that period of time. You're going to have a skills clinic thrown at you every turn of the pedal stroke, because there's always something that's going to arise that's going to teach you how to deal with it. Or if you don't, you're going to fall down and you're going to have to get up and do it again.
Right.
And when you do fall down, it doesn't hurt quite as much as it does if you're hitting asphalt. So to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. And now I have to go there. Wout van Aert. I mean, here we are. We've got a 24-year-old kid, because he's a kid in my eyes. I mean, you're all kids in my eyes. But anyway, we've got this guy, 24 years old. He has won not one, not two, but three world championship jerseys in cyclocross. He's incredible in that discipline. He's just a monster. And the races that he's doing are an hour long, right?
Right.
Roughly,
right.
I would say, probably about an hour. So he's racing for an hour, and now he's sitting in the Tour de France, and he's racing for 6-7 hours a day, and he produced a win. It's just like, oh my God, look at this guy.
It's thrilling. It's astonishing. We have seen this before with guys like Lars Boom and Stibar,
but not
at this level. These are guys who had come from cyclocross. Lars Boom, when he won the world championships in Italy,
right, and then he won the Paris-Roubaix once too,
right,
the same thing. But good discipline, because it's cobbles, so therefore, you know, he's got that.
Right.
But yeah.
John Eustace, who's a former professional rider and well-known cycling commentator, has a really good series that he's doing on Facebook. He'll just post 1,000 words about the tour the day before.
Oh, really?
You've got to follow. You've got to follow this.
Yeah.
He made a statement, I think it was last week, when Van Aert was really starting to show that he's seasoned for this.
Yeah.
That cycling, or at least Tour de France champions, used to come from the track. We had guys like Anquetil and Merckx.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it was an easy pathway to go from six-day racing into Grand Tour racing. Now we have cyclocross stars going from cyclocross to Grand Tour racing. It's a great reason to get your kid involved in cyclocross.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. It can go anywhere, really. It can. And it can go from like mountain bike racing too, because obviously off-road skills are critical, and it all changes a lot when you get on a mountain bike, but it's it still requires a lot of skill.
Oh, yeah.
So I think cross is the answer. I've just always loved it.
It really is. You know, cycling is it can be an expensive, equipment heavy sport.
Mm-hmm.
If you can go about it, if you enter just in road,
right.
Road racing is very expensive, or mm-hmm. can be. The equipment, if you want to go high dollar, you can spend $10,000 to $15,000 a year on a high end race bike, a power meter, carbon wheels. If you go into cyclocross, you have a bike that you can use for two disciplines. A cyclocross bike is essentially a road bike with a slightly taller bottom bracket, a little mm-hmm. bit higher off the ground,
mm-hmm.
and fatter tires. Now you can swap those wheels out or swap those tires
out.
Put
road wheels on.
For road wheels, exactly.
And you can race that bike on the road.
Many do.
Without any trouble whatsoever. As a matter of fact, some of us call our cyclocross bike our very favorite bike of all times, because I can swap wheels out and I can have an entirely different ride. So I love my cross bike. Cross bike makes sense.
It does. And it makes sense for young riders. We often tell parents when they ask, well, what bike should I buy? Well, what seasons would you like to race it on? Would you like to race it 6 months out of the year or three?
Right.
It's buy a cyclocross bike.
Yeah, because it's just a wheel swap out, really.
That's right.
Or even just a tire swap out, really, mm-hmm. if you really wanted to keep it economical. So speaking of which, so you have this program, and you've got all these kids involved. There's obviously kids out there that can't afford to get involved in this. What does CCAP do for that?
So for our school-based programs, we do offer grants.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, to get a school program off the ground, the first thing we have to find is a willing administration and a willing teacher or volunteer within the school system. Once we have that, we can provide some grant money to help them get started with new bikes, or bikes that we already have within our storage population. And then from there, they just have to add riders. And they can reapply for grants year after year, and we'll help them grow that program with whatever equipment they need.
So do you have a program with, you know, I deal with the folks up in BCCO, and I also deal with the guys over in Bike New Britain, and they're reconditioning old bikes, but and people bring them to them, and they donate to them to them so that they can repurpose them, put them back on the street again. Do you have any sort of a program where if you got an old race bike and you want to give it a home for a kid who's deserving, do you have that going on?
Absolutely. We have an open Facebook page called CCAP Recycle a Bicycle. You can go onto that website, and you'll see listings from beyond our sort of our sphere. Mm-hmm. But we also accept donations. We do have some guidelines on the donations, and if you contact us through our website at Connecticut's ctcyclingadvancement.com, you can see, you can click on the link and tell us what you've got, and we'll assess. Generally, we don't want bikes that are too old or maybe have some outmoded technology on them.
Sure.
We want to be able to provide a bike to a rider who's not going to be outgunned by old technology.
Not disadvantaged by old technology.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I used to ride against guys that should have been disadvantaged by what they were riding on. They still were faster than I was. But, you know, there is a certain part of the motor versus the bike.
True.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, we'd have all of our kids racing on the exact same bike, the same specifications.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Right? No, doesn't
no,
happen
it's not
that way.
Happen.
I remember going to races and seeing these, you know, young juniors from back in my day that were riding on bikes that I couldn't afford.
Right.
But, you know, mom and dad just went out and bought them a bike, a super bike, and they would just get all cranky about it's, you know, throw the bike down afterwards because they were mad because they didn't have a good day or whatever. And I'm just looking at it, and I'm wondering, do you have any idea what you're doing here? Do you have any idea what you have? This is a fine piece of equipment, and you're throwing it around like it's a piece of junk. It's not the bike that's the piece of junk. It's you.
Oh, it's the attitude. The attitude is bad.
Right.
Yeah. Growing up, my parents had a small bike shop that grew into a nice enterprise called Tandems East, and they focused on tandems. But my father always had a bike for me. It wasn't a new bike off the peg. I had mm-hmm. to earn it. Usually he found it through one of his friends. I can remember the first real race bike I had was a Basso Gap.
Oh, I know that bike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It had old Campy on it.
Yeah.
And
I
rode that bike through high school, eventually brought it to college with me. And
it's a great bike.
It's a great bike, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Columbus
really
SL
nice,
tubing.
Nice Italian bike.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Good. I used to sell them at my bike shop.
Oh,
I used
that's
to
right.
sell Bassos. Yeah. I sold all sorts of interesting Italian bikes because the Italian bikes were fun. They were, you know, we had lots. We had Pinarellos, we had Colnagos, we had, oh gosh, we had all sorts of Geos Torinos. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the blue Geos Torino, the classic blue.
Great branding.
Yeah, yeah, really, really good because that's the first thing you remember is Geos Blue.
Right.
You always remember that.
It's like the Bianchi Celeste.
Yeah, yeah, really fast bikes. Like probably too fast for what most people were using them for, because they were kind of crit oriented bikes,
right?
And most people were riding in road races. You see, we used to have road races back in my time, because road races were still feasible to put on financially. But now we have this, you know, it's expensive to put on a road race now.
It really is. There's very few races really on the calendar from now until mid August.
Yeah, we were talking about that, I think, when you guys were here the last time, that it was really thin, and I keep looking on Bike Reg, and you're right, there's not a lot going on. And I think Mike, I can't think of his name, up in Palmer.
Mike Norton.
Mike Norton put on an unofficial race. It was a non-USA cycling sanctioned race.
Oh, at the Palmer Speedway, right?
Yeah.
The July 4th early morning firecracker crew.
Yes, yeah. Yes, but it was an unsanctioned race, so it didn't really have USA cycling endorsement. And I'm sure that there were a number of USA Cycling people that showed up to that, which is, you know, you're kind of testing your license there.
Yeah, I would love for all races to be sanctioned by USA Cycling. You know, they're obviously a partner of CCAP. We are hand in hand in each other's success, mm-hmm. and we need USA Cycling for registration information, for insurance, and for really a good set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
USA Cycling is there, love them or hate them. because we need to have a governing body for the sport. Every sport in this country that reports to the IOC has a governing body.
That's right.
And that's important. Right. We need a set of rules.
I just saw something, too, that it appears that Bike Reg and USA Cycling have merged.
They have.
Or they're, I guess USA Cycling is using and endorsing Bike Reg as the official place for registration, which is great because, they do a great job. They do a wonderful job.
And Bike Reg, a local company based out of Northampton, Massachusetts.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
It's great.
I remember them. They were just like this little tiny organization, and now they were like they're the one. That's where you go.
Well, it's great for things like seeding for races. Cyclocross again is a great example. Most promoters use the cross results that's generated. Is it crossresults.com?
Yeah,
that website.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, owned by Bike Reg.
It is.
And it's a seeding system based, it's a ranking system, and promoters use it for the starting grid, for the starting position of every race.
Exactly.
Which makes sure that the fastest riders get the best position, and it forces you to race a little harder to get a better start position for the next race.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a great, they've done a lot with that. They've really, really matured well as far as that goes. And, we even use them. We use them for our Century Ride, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And the folks that I work with that do the Steeplechase Bike Tour, I've got them turned on to using Bike Reg. Just use, this is where cyclists look for cycling events. It's either that or active.com are the two different ones that I see used in this. But I see a lot more with Bike Reg than I do anything else.
Well, sure, active.com was the first one.
Right.
Bike Reg was a little bit simpler.
Yeah,
it's funny.
They were a lot simpler.
I was in a meeting, I think, last week, and we were talking about Bike Reg and said, if you type B into the menu bar on my browser on Google, BikeReg.com will populate that. Yeah, it just shows how ubiquitous it is among cyclists.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm glad that they're working on that. They're developing this partnership with USA Cycling. So now we're going to get live registration. Results will be faster. It's a better product for our riders.
I saw live registration. That's kind of an interesting thing. I didn't realize that they were going to go in that direction, but now we can. So we could do it at the venue, at the event. We can actually put people on live. That'll be good.
Right, rather than taking cash or a check and having to handwrite it in, you can just tap on a tablet.
And if you run an event like I do, we are not supposed to be handling any cash the day of our event because we are in a state park.
Right.
Not supposed to, I say. Okay. But we'll leave it at that.
Right.
But the point is that they don't really want us having financial transactions there. So therefore, we're not allowed to sell anything. And, that's kind of the way it works. But if you've got a tie-in to Bike Reg right there live, then you can just do it right there on the spot. All you really need is a hotspot, which is simple.
Right.
And off you go. And I know, if Alan shows up, Alan Atwood, who I've used for timing for years, he's always live and ready to go right there anyway.
Oh, the results are usually uploaded before I get back to my house.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's really amazing. And we'll talk about him more after the show because I do want to have a discussion with you about that.
Okay.
But I think he's one of the best services out there. I never have a problem when Alan's involved. So I like that.
I met Alan in, I think it was 2008 or 2009 when I promoted a race called Staten Cross on Staten Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of new to that scene in New York, and he was my official, and he was there until the bitter end doing my timing.
Yep.
And we were cleaning up during a snowstorm, and Alan was driving his wagon around helping us grab stepping stakes. Just a great guy and a great resource for the sport.
Yeah, he is. He is. And he's just been doing it forever. And I think that Alan and I were both racing bicycles at similar times too. I think there was some crossover there.
Really?
Back in the day. Yeah. Because he did do that at one time.
Yeah, I heard that rumor.
Yeah, yeah. It's a solid rumor. I can verify that. but yeah, I know no one has seen Alan on a bike for a long time. Not in that capacity.
But
no one's seen me like that either. So therefore,
come on, you still ride. Come
on. I ride. I just don't race. That's all. I that requires a major commitment that I am not willing to get involved in right now.
But you're the example that I'd like all of our kids to understand. It's great, and it's very important for us to make sure we've got kids on the top step of the podium. or on either any of the three steps of the podium. We want kids to race, and we want kids to feel great about winning. But the real champion, I'm stealing the words of race commentator Richard Fries. He said this to me over coffee a couple of weeks ago. The real champion is the person who's still riding in their 50s.
Yeah.
Because they're an advocate of the sport, they've got a lifelong history in the sport, and they're an example of a life that revolves around fitness.
Yeah, and I was actually fast in my 50s, but now I'm...
You're not still in your 50s?
Oh, no. I'm older than dirt. Right, Fran?
Older than dirt. I'm in my 50s.
Yeah, she's in her 50s. Yeah. She's in her 50s. Yeah.
Right smack in the middle
the
of
the young bride is definitely
so,
in her
50s. So psyched to be in the middle of my 50s.
But I'm almost in the middle of my 60s right now. Just can't believe it when I look at my driver's license go.
And 10 years ago I was so much stronger. It's so depressing.
Well,
I can only
tell you, you have a lot to look forward to. it just requires a lot more diligence when you get older to keep up whatever you can.
And rest and sleep.
And you know, you can still be fast and be old. There's no question. I mean, Joe
Ed Saunders.
Yeah,
Ed Joe
Saunders.
Pila.
From New Jersey.
Oh, Joe Saling.
Joe Saling.
Yeah, Joe Saling
is a classic example of, oh my God, this guy can fly on a bicycle still. And
He's got to be in his mid-70s now.
Yeah. And Joe, we go way, way back. He was working for Fuji Bicycles when I was working for Fuji Bicycles.
Oh, right.
He was a rep down in Jersey, and I was a rep up here. And so it's a funny story, too, because when I first showed up, there was, there was a big, everybody's going to ride their bike. We're going to go for a bike ride from the warehouse in New Jersey. And it was a sales meeting. And I get there, and they had a road bike ride and a mountain bike ride labeled. Well, I didn't have a mountain bike. I had a cross bike. So I showed up with my Batavis cross bike, steel Reynolds 531 steel cross bike. And I put that on top of my roof, and then my road bike was up there. And I go out to the parking lot at the hotel, and I'm looking, and there's two guys, and they're like kind of doing the old, scratch the chin kind of thing. And they're looking, and one of them goes, I think that's a cross bike. I think that's a cyclocross bike. And it was Joe. and this other guy, Gary, who was there. And they're looking at it, and Joe is explaining to this other friend of mine, Gary, who's a rep out in Indiana, is explaining to him what a cyclocross bike is and what it's used for. And I'm walking towards the car, and they go, who in the world owns this thing? And I went, that would be me. And they turn around and look, and I said, hi, I'm Ron Meniza. I'm the new rep up in Connecticut, and, blah, blah, blah. And we do our intros and all. And they said, so what are you going to do with that here? And I said, I'm going on the mountain bike ride with it. And they went, you're doing what? And I said, I'm going to go on the mountain bike ride with it. And they're like looking at me, and they're shaking their head. Have you ever ridden a mountain bike down here? And I said, no, I don't own a mountain bike. I own a cross bike. And so I proceeded to go out and ride with them, and they were just completely blown away by the whole idea. But then, so Joe immediately became a very good friend, and he was just like, so, what races have you done? Have you ever done this? You ever done that?
Right.
And I said, well, I primarily did a lot of the road races up in New England. That was my thing. We started going back and forth and chatting about it and all. So he was always, every time I'd show up, he would always go, so are you fit? Well, as fit as I can be, but anyway, Joe's just, he stayed fit, and he has more national championship jerseys than probably anybody in the racing circuit, because every year he wins.
I don't know if it's been done, but there really should be a full length article on Joe Saling and Dottie, his wife, and they're just their whole family.
Yeah.
Because he's it's not only Joe, but it's his grandchildren, Noah Granigan, is now a pro,
right?
And an excellent, excellent guy.
Yeah,
just a great kid.
Yeah, yeah. See, I don't know him. I don't know him, but
watched him grow up racing cross in New Jersey,
yeah.
And just went right through the ranks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's got not only Joe's blood, but his father's blood. His father is an excellent guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, Fran has a Joe story. And she went to a women's cycling clinic. You can tell them.
Yes, that. I went to a women's cycling clinic, and I walked in there, and there's this older gentleman that's leading, and I'm looking at him going, who is this? And then he starts talking, and I begin to realize that he's, you know, your classic cranky old cycling guy. And I'm like, oh, boy, I better pay attention. And he starts to go into...
She was, you know, living with a cranky old cycling guy.
Yeah. And I'm like, does he know Ron and like that? And I think ultimately I talked to him, and of course he did. And, you know, and he started telling us stories, and I'm like, oh, boy, this guy's been at it for a very long... I should be, like, you know, doing the whole Wayne and Garth, I am not worthy, I am not worthy. And, you know, so I realized who and what he was. And he gave us a handout with information on it. I don't know where it is. I should try to look for it.
Oh, you should dig that up, yeah.
Yeah, I know. But the handout, it was a little booklet, and the booklet was covered in sort of the cover was goldenrod yellow. And he said, I made this cover goldenrod yellow because this is what color your pee should not be. Yeah. So meanwhile, he just said somebody should write an article about Joe sailing. Well, guess what? On Molly Herford on August 10, 2015, wrote an article for Bicycling Magazine called Cycling's Coolest Couples, Joe Sailing and Dottie Sailing.
Yay. Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right. You'll have to share
and,
that with me.
And so this is 2015.
Oh,
in
okay.
2015, so it says Joe Sailing 74 and Dottie Sailing 71.
That's in 15.
So that's in 2015. So that's 4 years ago. So, right? So that's
yeah.
So he's 78 now.
Yeah.
So he's my mom's age,
yeah,
basically.
And I think I just read something about Joe. He's also an event announcer. He does really, really good.
Signature voice.
Just yeah. Yeah, it's Joe. And I think he's retiring from that, finally.
Oh.
I thought I read this recently, but I'm not positive. Don't quote me on it.
Somerville, the Tour of Somerville will not be the same.
Oh, no.
Joe's been announcing that race for years.
Oh, I know he has. Yeah. I know he has. Yeah, he is a classic. He is totally a classic. He knows all the riders. He knows everybody.
He does.
Yeah, he's he's an interesting guy. He's a really good guy, too. Really, really good guy.
He is.
So, yeah. But, you know, people like Joe, of course, get kids involved in cycling, you know, and that's a good thing. But we have this great program here that just where's it going? What do you think?
Well, we're going to continue to add, and we're adding new teams weekly. We're opening our cyclocross registration this week, which it's July.
I know
we've
got to
start thinking about cross.
I know.
Heck, we're already talking about races that are coming up
among
promoters.
I know.
But we open cyclocross registration this week, which means we're going to be expanding to some new teams.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our mountain bike teams have decided to branch out into cyclocross, which is great. These kids want to continue riding. We'll flow that through the season. We expect to see probably a 25% to 30% increase in ridership this year.
Yes.
Based on our trends from the last few years.
Oh my
which
God.
Means well over 100 kids lining up every weekend racing, which is great for promoters. It's great for the sport.
It's really good for promoters because obviously we have a cost issue. And, you know, we have to meet our expenses. But and I know that we have turned a deal on for the juniors, which I am very, very in favor of, is that, you know, I want to get kids racing. What I would love to find, and if anyone out there on the airwaves happens to be listening on this, I would love to find a sponsor that will cover junior entry fee costs and attach it to my race, because I'd love to just put on the race that nobody has to pay an entry fee for if they're under 18 or under.
So if we could
that would be a
tremendous,
really cool thing, because talk about an incentive to get you involved in the sport. There it is right there. It's like right in front of you. You just show up and race your bike, and that's it.
Yeah, once we eliminate the financial barriers and the transportation issues,
mm-hmm.
we can get every kid on a bike and every kid to a bike race. These are big steps, obviously.
Yeah.
But the programs that we've built are starting to get that momentum. They're getting that community support. We're able to provide some support where we can. and that gets more kids to races. We've seen some programs like, I'm going to give a shout out to Kristen Gallagher, who's one of our great school coaches at Ledyard.
I was just going to say, Ledyard has got a rock star down there.
Yeah, it's a lot. The kids are great, but Kristen Gallagher is a great example of a coach who lives the sport, came into the sport, lives the sport, is helping us grow. The high school team is now growing. I got to spend, I went up to NEMBA Fest a few weeks ago and got to spend some time with a few of the Ledyard kids and riding with Kristen. And there's just so much positivity and great energy there. It's no wonder why that program is growing so quickly.
I have got to get her on the show. She would be a really good person to put on. We've spoken before, and I should catch her now because it's summer.
That's right.
She's not teaching right now.
Oh, yeah, she's on vacation.
Right, she's on vacation. I'll have to reach out to her.
Well, Kristen, if you're listening.
Yeah, so Kristen, if you're listening, I want you on the show because we could have a blast. We could just have a really good time with this. Yeah, she's doing a lot of really good things. And you know, what you said about, you know, the energy, the enthusiasm, all that, that's how you do this. That's how you do it. You do it by just being excited about the sport.
Right.
And it just follows. I mean, you look at what David Hoyle did. And Dave Hoyle had, you know, he had all that energy.
Well, you know, I've said this before about Dave. I could never say no to Dave.
Yeah.
Anything he asked of me, I was there. Because he did it with such enthusiasm and kindness and honesty that there was nothing behind it. There was no no ulterior motive. Dave just wanted to get kids on bikes and wanted to get you involved.
Right.
And it was infectious.
It was. Yeah, he was just a real special guy.
Yeah, we're going to I have a lot of goals this year, but most of them revolve around continuing Dave's mission and some of the projects that he laid out for the year, and we're going to be slowly ticking them off, but I want to make sure that Dave's legacy continues. We're working on a Ride Like Dave award that
nice.
I can tell you about the next time I'm on.
Okay.
That we're
okay.
Hopefully going to have rolled out by the end of the cyclocross season. It's going to help us honor some of our great riders in our program.
Very nice.
Yeah. Dave's legacy to continue.
Even as I
step in and lead this program, put my own touch on it, I will be informed by the way Dave led and the way he taught all of us to be kind and honest and gentle with our kids in the program.
Yeah, all the kids are great. I you know, I rarely have any kind of an incident at a race with any of the kids. Kids are good.
That's good.
Parents are challenging.
Well, you know, one of the I hear that. I was I raced a Greenfield on Sunday, and the announcer, and I don't want to disparage the announcer, but we were after the 9-14 race, or at least during that race, the announcer was getting some names confused, and we were shouting out corrections. And it wasn't because we were annoying parents; it's because we wanted the kids who were on the race course to get the recognition that they deserved.
Right.
And I'm sensitive about that because I have two kids who are involved in CCAP as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there can be, like in any sport, there can be parents that are a little bit overzealous. But we do a great thing. And Mike Conlon, who is a longtime USAC official, I heard him say this a few years ago, and we reverberate this among our teams. If you have an issue with results, if you have an issue with the race course, don't send your parents. Come and talk to him directly.
That's right. And he's really good about that. And he'll send parents away.
That's right.
And say, bring your kid over here. Let me talk. Because he uses every single one of those moments as a teaching moment. And Mike and Meg Conlon. There's another pair.
Yeah, we're rattling off all these names of great people in New England
cycling that have made cycling what it is here.
Yeah. And that's really what this sport is. It's a sport of legacy.
Yeah.
And CCAP is allowing us to continue the legacy that guys like you and Meg and Mike Conlon have built. And we're going to pass it on to the next generation and hope that they become race promoters and team directors and start their own development programs or come back to CCAP as coaches. You know, every Tuesday night we have our the Tuesday night crit at Rentschler Field in East Hartford.
Right. I announce it every week.
Well, thank you for that. Last night we had once a month in the summer we have a juniors only night where the juniors actually get to race from 5 to 6. So we do a 9-14 at 5 o'clock and a 15-18 at 5:30, and then the usual B and A races after that. As we were setting up and getting registration going, I see a rider approach, and I didn't recognize him at first. I thought he was someone else. And he said, "Jed, I'm here." And it was a rider who had come through the CCAP program, had gone off, and had come back to Connecticut, and was now back in the program and excited to race, young guy in his 20s. And that's what we want to see.
Yeah, Yeah, it is. It is. It's great. It's great to see. And, you know, it happens with the adults, too, once they've been in the circuit for a while, and then they fade away for a while, and then they do come back. They actually do come back, which is a reference to someone else that we know. But anyway, we're keeping names out. But, bicycle racing is infectious. It really is. It's something that you just kind of, once you get it in your blood, it's really, really hard to stay away from it. And even if it's just watching it, I can't get enough of it. I love it. I just love it. I love watching what happens. I love watching the things that can develop out of bike racing. It's such a chess game. It really is. And people don't understand what it is. I don't know if they understand what it is until they've been there. I know that we've got some really good commentators on TV now that explain things really, really well. My favorite will probably never hit the U.S. airwaves, but Sean Kelly.
Oh, Sean Kelly.
Sean Kelly. Sean Kelly. Sean Kelly. Once Sean Kelly is the rock star of commentators. That man will describe a race situation to you to the point where you know nothing about bicycle racing. When you get done listening to Sean, you will know everything about bicycle racing. He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. One of my favorites.
A dominant force in the 80s. Sean Kelly was my hero growing up.
Yep.
Until Le Mans came along, and then I had my own hero in America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there you go.
But those two are contemporaries,
right? Yep. Right, exactly. Well, my no longer with us brother-in-law Jim Henry named his first son Sean, because Sean Kelly was I think it's actually Sean. I think his middle name maybe even Kelly, but Sean Kelly Henry. So because Sean Kelly was like the thing, you know, he was a thing, and he was just an incredible sprinter, and he was just, you know, it was fun to watch.
A great read of the race situation.
Yep.
So are you, you're only watching the tour and you're cycling via NBC?
Right now, okay. Yeah. I'll pick up little YouTube accounts here and there. That's pretty much what, you know, we've got it on our cable package, so we're watching it there. But
there are more creative ways to watch the tour with different commentary.
Oh, I've been watching it with Steep Hill for years.
Yeah.
And Steep Hill, but then when NBC Sports came in and Flow Bikes and all these others came in, they kind of grabbed the rights, so you can't get the broadcasts anymore like you used to. I mean, I'd watch it in Italian. I don't care. I would watch it. A couple of years ago, the Giro was being, it started in Israel.
Right.
And so I watched Israeli TV. Because it was on,
right,
and it was on my computer, but it was still on. I could watch it. I couldn't understand a thing they were talking about. Fran could pick up a little bit of the Hebrew here and there when we were watching it, but
I know that word.
But the thing that gets me here is that you don't know bike racing until you've heard an Italian or a Spanish commentator broadcasting it. In a language that you don't understand at all, but you know what's going on.
Right.
Because they get so excited. The level of enthusiasm and excitement that comes through just in the tone of how they're delivering the commentary.
You don't think Phil gets excited enough?
No.
No.
Aww.
Phil is sleepy. He's sleepy.
Aww.
And, you know, now they brought Bob Roll in, and they put him into the position
where
Paul was. And they're doing what they do on NBC. And you know, I mean, a credit to them that, hey, it's on American TV. We get to watch it. The discredit to them, it's not the Travel Channel, folks. It's bike racing.
It's exciting.
You know, it's exciting. And they don't give that same exuberance,
no.
I guess, that you're looking for. You just listen to an Italian feed. Oh, my God. It'll just like, you'll be jumping up and down in your chair. You have no idea what they're saying. And you're just jumping up and down in excitement as you're watching it. You can see that it's exciting, but, man, you can hear it. And it's just an emotional
Aww.
Response. It's just incredible. It's like when Wout van Aert won the race the other day.
Yeah.
Did you see him afterward? They went up to interview him afterwards. The man is crying.
Right.
He is just so emotional
it's
about
so
what
raw.
He just did.
Yeah.
And it was real.
Yeah.
It was real. And it's what you and I get from the whole bike racing thing and why we're so passionate about it, because there's a lot more to it than what you just see on the Travel Channel. But that's probably bad. NBC is going to come after me. Anyway, I got to wrap this thing up. Jed, this has been awesome. Again, you're coming back. You do realize that. You're definitely coming back.
I would love to. Thank you.
We'll do this as much as you want to do this, because this is really fun. You obviously get me very, very excited about all of this. And so my guest today has been Jed Kornbluh, and he is now the new executive director of Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program in Middletown, Connecticut. It's an awesome program. It is a landmark program. It is nationally recognized as the youth cycling program. Just keep doing a great job, man. This is so cool. We're going to get kids back on bikes, more kids back on bikes. And, you know, it just grows from there. That's it. And, you know, keep it up.
Thanks, Ron.
It's great.
It's
good stuff. So.
Thanks, Fred.
Anyway, moving on here real quick, I'm going to run down super quickly on the calendar here. Remember, we mentioned it earlier, the Tuesday night series in East Hartford, that you can find out more about that or sign up for it on bikereg.com. Click on the calendar page and you will find that. It's a training race. If you've never done a race before, you want to learn how to race bicycles, it's a great place to go. This is where you start. You don't just go out and buy a license and hop into a big race. Don't do that. That's like a disaster waiting to happen. Even the training race, be cautious, get to know people, learn from people, learn from maybe some people who have raced bikes before you show up there. But anyway, it's a great opportunity, and it's right here in Connecticut in East Hartford. Let's see, what do we got going on coming up? Those are past. We're just moving on here. This Friday, July 19th through July 21st, the League Instructor Seminar for the League of American Cyclists, put on by the Center for Latino Progress in Hartford. The registration is closed on that. So, but it is happening, and it is happening right here in Connecticut. So that's kind of a cool thing.
My turn.
Fran, go.
And Pedal, this Friday on July 19th, Pedal Power Willimantic will have their grand opening ride and chain cutting. There will be a 1.5 hour bike ride that will be starting at 9:30 a.m. And the chain cutting, not ribbon cutting, will be happening at 11:30 a.m. That's at the new Pedal Power location, which is the former Scott Cyclery, and Scott Johnson will be there. The address is 1171 Main Street in Willimantic, Connecticut.
That's great. Awesome. A couple of other things that are coming up here very soon. The Worcester Hill Climb for the George Street Bike Challenge for Major Taylor. Check that out. It's really cool. It's just an uphill time trial. It's wicked steep. It is nasty. It is super short, but it's been going on for years. It's where Major Taylor trained. If you want to know more about Major Taylor, go to my Facebook page. You'll find there a link there that was done by NPR about Major Taylor. It's very, very well done. That is on July 28th. The day before that, July 27th, the Berkshire Brevet Petersburg 300K in Westfield, Massachusetts, on the 28th, back again, right here in our own backyard, the 2019 Thread City Century. You ask that every time I broadcast that.
The Berkshire Brevet.
Yeah. The 2019 Thread City Century, put on by the Thread City Cyclers, which is the local cycling group right here in northeastern Connecticut.
And I'm the rest stop coordinator.
And Fran is the rest stop coordinator. So expect interesting rest stops, because Fran does that. So anyway, that's Saturday, July 28th. No, it's Sunday, July 28th. Excuse me. All rides start and finish at Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut.
And you're running SAG, right?
And I am running SAG. Yes, I will be there. There's a 102, an 84, a 66, and a 43-mile ride. You want to know more about the roads that Ron and Fran ride on all the time and are always bragging about? Come on out. Do the ride. It's great. ThreadCityCyclers.com. You can get your information there. And I believe it is also up on Bike Reg. There is also coming up August 17th, the Steeplechase Bike Tour, this is our 28th year of the Steeplechase Bike Tour. Local charity ride, gives money to local charities in our area. There's a 100, a 62.5, a 50, a 35, a 20-mile bike ride, and also a 5-mile walk. And this is riding through the lovely roads of northeastern Connecticut. It's a really cool event, and it's all for a good cause. Also, Fran and I will be away this weekend because we are going off to the Farm to Fork Fondo
Greater Burlington, on the Champlain Islands.
Right, on the Champlain Islands. So that's kind of a cool thing.
Yes.
I will be announcing. Fran will be helping with registration. So, and she will also be partaking in the ride,
I believe.
You can do the, you're going to do the big one this year?
I want to do the
big
one.
You're going to go see Canada?
Yes, I'm going to go see Canada, but we're instructed not to step
don't
into it.
Don't step into Canada because you may not get back in. Right. So, anyway.
Even if you have a passport.
It's a lot trickier now than it used to be. Anyway, my name is Pedalin' Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, send an email over to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes and more episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, or better yet, be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.